Blog Talk Radio.
You know, we had to have a little Bob there. Bob always puts it down, the song War. You know what he's talking about. This is 8 o'clock. We're running 8:06, actually. But you've got the place. If you're listening live, this is Kay's Son and Friends. I'm Citizen Payne, Kay's son, and my friends Wayne Gilman, Byron Saunders, the brothers. A lot going on this week. We want to do two shows. I wanted to do one Monday, but I fell asleep, everybody. It be that way sometime, fighting the struggle. Got to keep moving. Today, what we want to talk about, you know, Trump. Oh, yeah, man, we missed Trump invades Tulsa on Juneteenth weekend. And I really wonder what those black people that showed up to the Trump rally were thinking coming on Juneteenth weekend. And it just goes to show we're not a monolithic group. There's some house Negroes and some field Negroes, and I don't get it. So the weekend when your people were set free, I could see being a supporter, but the weekend when your people are set free, you thought it was necessary to go to show your support in the middle of a pandemic, life-threatening, but you wanted to go there and show blacks for Trump. Right on with your bad self. Right on. We like to call it the Traveling Trump Coronavirus Roadshow because he went to Arizona. Cases are spiking. They had a little church thing they were in where the dude said they had a special mister or breezer thing where they. I'm not going to get off all into the details. I'm just going to give you the headlines of what we want to discuss tonight also. People is tearing down those statues and monuments, and Trump and them don't like it. You got the cases spiking in the three Republican states. And you had to know that NASCAR, somebody in NASCAR was going to react to something Black Lives Matter, especially when you start talking about the Confederate flag in NASCAR. Shoot, man. Let's bring the brothers in. Brother Wayne Gilman. What's happening, Wayne? How you doing this evening?
I'm just fine, man. You know, just counting down the days before the big election in November. You know, it's just so frustrating. I am proud, in spite of my frustration, of those millennials out there who are taking a stand and stepping up the protestation against this current administration and all those who support it. And, you know, as for those Negroes that you had referenced, you know, I lived at a time when we used to refer to each other as Negroes in the late 50s, early 60s, you know, and it just amazes me. I know what context is being said, but yeah, we're not a monolith, and you know, the same way some of us sold our brothers and sisters into slavery, why should we be surprised by those who perhaps are descendants of those who sold us into slavery, you know. I hope they got paid well to risk their own health and their lives to be in that auditorium and to hear that idiot's buffoonery for the better part of a couple of hours, you know. And the blowback about the turnout, you know, this it's sad. I mean, I think even the party knows, the party faithful, the Republican Party faithful, knows that he's falling apart, that the future is about to bring about a huge disappointment. But we have to be vigilant. We can't afford to be complacent. We can't afford to just give this guy a break because we're tired. You know, we have got to keep the momentum up until November.
I feel you on that. I agree 100% that we definitely need to do that. Let's get Brother Byron in here. Brother Byron, how you doing this evening? And what's your
brief? Well, as you know, I'm down here in the cesspool where we have, and I thank my brother Wayne Gilman for suggesting that we should have a death clock, a POTUS death clock.
Oh, yeah.
So here we are with the POTUS death clock. Just so you understand, my friends, what does that really mean? What that means is this. We've got, in the day, today's the 24th of June, in the United States, right now, as of today, there are over 2,417,072 people who have been infected. It is rising quickly. There were 34,000 infections today alone. The deaths is up to 123,590, and they're saying by the end of June, first part of July, we will be up over 150,000 dead people in this country. Washington, D.C., right now, as of today, June 24th, there are 10,128 people infected in your nation's capital. Just opened up again today, phase two. Getting ready to open up phase three, which will let all the hordes of the visitors who want to come from around the nation and around the globe. There are dead in this city, 541 people. In New York City, your financial capital of the world, today, June 24th, there are 210,185 people infected and counting. Dead, 22,365. Now, you tell me, of the 50 states as of June 20, 23 of those states are spiking COVID-19. Most of those red states that were saying, well, we got to open up. We got to get the economy going. In spite of getting all of that, now you got infected people who are about to, some will meet the fate as have over 123,590 people in the United States. You will die. And they're still planning these get-togethers. Now, with respect to removing the statutes, long overdue, let's be very clear. Andrew Jackson, as bad a president as this one. Andrew Jackson, yeah, the guy that on the dollar bill, the one who engaged.
Hey, before you move too deeply into that,
yeah,
let's dig in a little bit more on these rallies, because you know there's a couple of details that we're overlooking or that we didn't mention. Like one, the fact that you already mentioned there was a spike in both states in Tulsa,
yeah.
Not to mention the complete disrespect of that taking place on that weekend, right? And obviously, we talked about last week it being a message that they wanted to send. I'm sorry, that they clearly wanted to send to African Americans, right? But also the fact of going to Arizona and you have that church and the individuals at that church or whatever the place it was were saying that the two men who kind of reminded me kind of a church version of Siegfried and Roy, saying that. They're saying that, you know, we have a special mister here and it's going to kill the COVID and there'll be no problem with the droplets or whatever craziness they said. And one of the reporters from MSNBC said, yeah, I called the company and they said, no, the machine, the machine doesn't do that. And so a couple of days later, the manufacturing company came out and made a statement And, of course, that video had to be, they pulled that video down off the internet. But this is the sickness of these people. There's a sickness in them. And part of it, we know that part of that sickness is white supremacy and the addiction to it. I don't know whether we were talking to, one of us were talking about or somebody I was talking to was saying they're, you know, they're addicted to that feeling. My partner, I think of my partner, Butch Robinson. And it's clear that they're willing to buy all of this, these lies, watch these things go on with their own self eyes. I'm thinking of a line from the Wii series, Byron of the play, Sally and all of those.
Yeah.
But watch all of this stuff with their own eyes and still be willing to believe what they are told because they are tied to that belief system of white supremacy. That's, it is deep, man. I mean, they had, if you can get away with saying, there's no COVID, there's COVID, there's no COVID, there's COVID, take this, take that, I'm not responsible, and you're pointing every which way, then you people need my supporters to come out and support me. We support you, Mr. President, yada, yada. Come to the rally. We're going to have a big rally, but we want you to sign this waiver first, just in case you do get sick from the stuff that I told you you wouldn't get sick from. Come on, if these people don't, if you can't realize the hypocrisy of that, or can't see that you're being taken with the, by the three-card Monty guy from New York, then there's no hope for these individuals. I guess that's what I'm going on this long rant to say. And part of their sickness does not allow them clearly to think clear enough to even look out for themselves.
Well, Eric, and you know, just to comment on what you're saying, I think the thing that's really sad about all this, all right, 6,000 people showed up at that arena in Tulsa on the weekend that should have been basically a international global black weekend for you know, our community. But putting that aside, you know, it's a 19,000 arena, so you do the math. It wasn't filled. But he had the audacity to turn around and say the next day that Fox Television Network, which I believe did gavel-to-gavel coverage, I didn't watch that particular night, so I'm just going predicated on what he said the next day, that Fox had the highest ratings in the history of the entire network because all those folks that he was not able to bring in, because some of them had a conscience and figured, well, you know, I could become infected. I'll turn the tube on and just watch the game, watch what goes on. And but again, what bothers me is that you have this double standard when it comes to what is fake and what is real. And I can't help but feel that Fox continues to do a disservice with respect to the American people, even the network for that matter. You know,
you think?
Their poll numbers have reflected certain things, but it's those idiots that they have on as entertainers, you know, that this is separate from the news, who basically has cast a spell over his, you know, hardcore constituency. And, you know, if they tell them to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge tomorrow, they're out there jumping off. And
yeah, but
I don't know, I just think the Bush administration. Come again?
That's Fox since the Bush administration, since the W's administration.
Yeah, well, exactly.
That's when they started,
and
they started going.
I'm just saying, the FCC should have been put, if Fox were black owned and operated, you think we would get away with half the crap they spew? You know?
Yeah, I'm not even really focusing. Yeah, I mean, you know, I understand that.
I understand what you're saying, but I mean, the problem is that, you know, And again, it shouldn't even be about ownership. It's a responsibility. It is a responsibility. You know, we are the fourth estate. Thank God we live in a country in which we have the ability to cite what we cite. But, you know, the deal is that they blur the lines between what is considered credible news, and they get a few talking heads who be very convincing and bring about a point for those people who aren't as well-versed as you are, or Byron for that matter, who are not looking at history, that are ingrained with that evilness of whatever, you know, white privilege has given them.
I get all
that's
that.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but there, but that's, and I want to get B in here too. But that's presupposing that what they write down on paper, like you said, the fourth estate, and we're supposed to be above this, blah blah blah. No, that's presupposing that they actually live by that. But clearly, that's just their PR statement that they want the world to know. Because the way they really operate is as being the PR or the propaganda arm for white supremacy and these white racist attitudes. So what we have to question the validity of those, not the validity of the words in the Constitution, but the validity and the honor and the integrity of those who claim to uphold those words. Because it appears, like I've said before, that's what they say on paper. What they really do in real life is a whole different thing. And also, they tried to blame the low turnout, if you remember, another fact I want to throw in, on the protesters. Claim it was the protesters' reason because they didn't come out, which was a lie. But, you know,
it is.
That's what they do. And I don't know if you want to jump in there, Byron, you around or whatever, but, you know.
The thing that we must pivot back to is the history of this individual, who on the day of his inauguration lied about the size of his audience. So would you expect anything less from a person who said that we're expecting 19,000 to fill the stadium, and whether TikTok or Big Baca, I don't care who did it, it was done. It could have been the ancestors of our African-American people who said, you're not going to come to my city and mess up my holiday, period. I don't care who you are. Just like hurricanes. Where do hurricanes come from? Legend has it they come from Africa, across the Atlantic, and then do damage slave owners. Well, okay, you can buy into that if you want to. I kind of believe that. Why? After I believe in, Batman, I can believe in Donald McDonald and Santa Claus, too.
Why not if you believe in white Jesus, brother? If you believe in white Jesus, why can't you believe in the hurricane?
Exactly. So at the point at which, if you want to go with TikTok, fine. You want to say it's the protesters, fine. All I know, out of 119,000 people, only 5,200 people showed up. Now, let's get to the real optics of what this is saying to us, America. For a president whose base is supposed to, by Fox News, represent 41%, I guarantee you, if the dynamics of what we saw on Saturday is anything coming for the very near future with our election, let me just tell you something. His base is no more than 29%, and that's high. I'm giving him a high 29%.
Hey, we got to keep the momentum, man.
They got more visibility than they actually probably have numbers, you know.
That's exactly right. And then when you stuff a church, you're going to stuff a church where those clowns, for what religion are they representing? I'm really confused about whether they're followers of the Prince of Peace, whose name is Yahweh.
Slow down, pump the brakes.
Come on now, because at the point at which you want to drink
maybe they might really be following the other guy.
Listen, all I know is this. When I see what was on the TV and I heard the message like I've heard it before, even the talking head said 18 minutes into his presentation, they were bored to death.
Because it's more of the same.
That's right.
It's the same racist rant. It doesn't stop, you know?
Right.
And he hopes to garner support with it.
So we,
with respect to his leadership, let's put a pin in this.
Let's move on to that hearing today.
Yeah. With respect to his leadership, I just want to say, you know, really, what is leadership from the commander in chief? You know what it's supposed to be. This man is a failure. I don't care what legislation he put up. He hadn't put up any legislation. I imagine his wall of executive orders is supposed to be the new way we do legislation. It's not. It's not legislation at all. And we need to address it because this GOP, this Congress, and this Senate are a failure.
Well, when you say he needs to address it, you're assuming that the man knows what legislature is.
And clearly, his lack of interest in the way politics work, the phrase and terms that are used, and what government does. I mean, we're dealing with the guy who didn't know that Great Britain or England had, you know, was a nuclear power. So, I mean, you know, the ignorance and the willful ignorance is astounding, but it's the arrogance that they come with. But what do you guys think about the corruption, about Bill Barr's corruption? And also, if you watched any of the hearing, the obvious obstacles that the Republicans were trying to throw in the way, particularly when one congressman accused the gentleman of kind of being cowardly because he was testifying from home because the doctor said that would be best for his newborn infant child. And this is how low they are, that this man, even though the guy was about a mile and a half, didn't make a difference. He's got a newborn kid. Anybody can understand what people are going to do for their kids. But this is how low these individuals are. Because this is how much they know that they have scraped the bottom or are playing on the bottom. But whatever you guys think about it, I'm interested to hear.
I didn't get a chance to watch the hearings, but I've been keeping abreast of, you know, Barr's behavior since the weekend. You know, he committed a cardinal sin here in New York by dismantling the Southern District and coming up with all sorts of excuses as to why he's doing it. And then he's trying to make it sound like as if it was a unilateral decision of his own, when you know full well he is just working for – it's like almost a lawyer-client relationship, as client as Donald Trump. And, you know, it just brings up the need to have impeachment hearings this time for him. I know he's making an appearance before Congress in a couple of days, but, you know, he's got a lot of explaining to do, as Lucy would say, you know. It's just ridiculous with the stuff that he gets away with. It is so apparent. You can connect the dots and see this is all about favoritism towards this administration. There's no objectivity, you know. It saddens me that it goes on, and we have to remain vigilant about things like that too, you know, because all of this is going to go part and parcel with the packaging for November, and they're throwing anything up against the wall just to make themselves look good. It is what it is.
You're right. Bill Barr is as dangerous to the democracy as Pompeo and Trump himself. These three men have committed acts of treason way beyond anything that the founding fathers defined as treason. They've stepped way across the line. They've impugned the integrity of the Constitution, their oath that they swore to protect and serve, just like some of those KKK cops. And they, in addition to that, the obfuscation, the obstruction of justice by the Department of Justice is the very reason why they need to be in jail. And if there was a hanging,
all of them,
and they would be hung for the treason that they committed. That's how heinous a crime that they have done. And not only the treason, they have committed far worse, because they're now complicit in the act of murder of American citizens who could have been and should have been protected by leadership and policy. These men and women are guilty. Guilty, way beyond. And if they had an impeachment hearing today after what Bolton revealed, they would all be in jail right now. We wouldn't even have to wait for the trial. They'd have been picked up by every agency known to the American safety protocols. Okay.
And Bolton should be in that crew too. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't spend a farthing on his book. I would go to the North Shore Public Library before I buy it.
Yeah.
Hey, whatever gets us the information, as long
as all of the best of it.
You're saying, say it again, Byron?
He's as guilty. Bolton is guilty. He's bargaining for immunity. I said that months ago, when when he refused to testify at the Mueller investigation, and I said he was bargaining for an immunity position. And you know, he's guilty of far worse crimes, because before this administration, he was, like Barr, were part of the alt-right, the Reagan administration. Remember, I told you the prosecutor for the King case in Los Angeles, Rodney King, you know who he was? Who led the prosecution for the United States Justice Department? Bill Barr.
Eric Garcetti's dad. Barr. Who was it? Bill Barr?
Right.
Okay.
Bill Barr. That's right.
For what
case? You've got to go back in the history of these men and women who have been in acts of treason for quite some time.
Well, that's why his colleague, David Ayer, right, who was on the testifying today, was saying that Barr was that type of guy who believed in ultimate power of the presidency.
Yeah. So I mean, there's no free pass for Bill Barr. There's no free pass for the former head of the CIA, Pompeo, who obliterated the diplomacy of our State Department. Our State Department has never, ever, in the history that it was formed, was to be used as a military weapon. That's what Pompeo has done. It's about diplomacy.
What about military weapons?
He's weaponized the State Department. And he's fired most of the people that would support the State Department's effort for diplomacy. And that's why the world is laughing at us right now, because we have no undersecretaries, we have no diplomats who are loyal to the Constitution, or they're not even loyal to the president. And the ones that are have been brought up on the investigation by the Mueller investigation and have been charged accordingly. So, you know, this is the corruption that is throughout the entire administration. And let us not forget the GOP led by Mitch McConnell, the nation's number one treason and traitor.
Yeah, and they're
complicit in it.
Yeah.
Right.
And you said something a moment ago, Eric, that needs to be reminded, you know, at least people should be reminded of the fact that Bill Barr wrote a thesis, if I'm not mistaken, on what he thought the presidency should be with regard to it, of the president having ultimate powers. Then he comes before Congress as he was being sworn in, and he testified that he could be impartial, fair, and balanced. And he's been anything but that. And I had heard talk, I believe, either earlier today or yesterday, that one of the law schools that he attended, they wanted to ask for a degree, a certification or something that he was given. I think it might have been an honorary degree from one of the law schools he attended, not the one that he passed the bar to become who he was back then. But they, you know, they're citing him as not upholding what the Constitution and what that office was constructed for, you know. So as time goes on, I hope that Congress, you know, and again, you still have the issue with the Senate being fully in control of the GOP, as Byron just pointed out. But, you know, Americans need to see what is happening here. The poll numbers show that they're beginning to see what's going on. And I just hope there's a clean sweep in November. That's it, you know. And even yesterday's elections, you know, a lot of progressives seem to be, you know, getting a foothold, that even some of the incumbent Democrats who have been there are now shaking in their boots, because some of them have not done what they were sent to Washington to do. So, hey.
Well, look at your boy, Elliot Engel. You know, look at your boy, Elliot
Engel.
Yeah, Engel.
Exactly.
Looks like
that's my
job.
District. That's my district. Mm-hmm. Westchester and the Bronx. Yep.
And ironically, he's always been, I mean, a good Democrat, you know. I mean, he's always fought on the side of and joined in the fight to get things achieved. Obviously, that hot mic moment that he said he really didn't care if he didn't have a primary.
Yeah.
That changed my whole perspective about him.
Well, and the thing is that, I mean, anybody can make a faux pas, but, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, given how delicate things are right now, you don't want to take the risk of allowing someone, especially if your district has a lot of people who are well qualified to replace you. And then, again, I think that one of the things that bothered a lot of the constituents in this particular district, and I noticed even in Westchester, there were a lot of people out for Jamal that they were not happy about Elliot Engel's stance when it came to Israel, you know. And not everything is about what they consider the mother country. And I really feel, to a certain extent, that is the problem all the way around. I mean, you know, you could offer support, but sometimes it's like blinders when it comes to them. And I know this is almost treason to even bring it up on the air, but it is what it is, you know. And I think it that cost him more than anything else, because he does have representation. But I'd be curious to see what's going to happen in the final analysis, because a lot of people voted by mail, you know, but it seems like a landslide.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean,
people are stupid.
Go ahead, Byron, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say the body politic that has been played to be intellectually benign is awakening. As the young folks say, the body politic right now is pretty woke, and they're stepping up to the plate, and they're saying some stuff that I have not heard. I just turned 70, and so I've been through several election cycles, okay, and I've not seen a cycle like this ever. And what I'm referencing is the issues that are paramount are party platforms that used to be way down on the priority list are now at the top of the list. And I'm anticipating the next big priority list that's going to drop, and it's going to drop soon, is that gun issue. Because at the point at which they are masquerading this Second Amendment
police
idea,
legislation.
Yes, and they're masquerading it in some kind of effort to protect people's ownership. But at the point of which is what's woke up this body politic are three major issues: domestic terrorism, guns, race. Those three issues right there are at the top of every American conversation, and they're not going to get rid of it in the next 5 months. You can best believe that. And any incident that comes up, like the ones that are just happening, like that you see almost every week, happening now, are going to multiply, because the summer is going to be hot, y'all. The summer is going to be deadly hot.
Coronavirus. Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, you know, people are looking for that now. And, you know, I was having this conversation with my buddy earlier about, we've been talking about how to best reach people and reach the average person on the street, many of whom have come out for the protests since things. And, you know, there are a lot of people, like we're saying, a lot more people are woke now and aware of things. But there's also that yearning, the quest, thirst for that knowledge, which probably for a long time has not infected, or infected is not a word, but we want to use something as powerful as an infection in terms of its spread, has not caught on with the majority of people, to the point where they realize the direct connection of your interaction, how active you are, how much do you interact with the system in an active citizen act, you know, as a citizen, to be active in what's going on in your society. And now they are. A large part of that is due, obviously, to social media and cell phones. And we all know that when people can see something so instantaneously, because they were able to see Rodney King, but Rodney King did move the needle and move people to act in a similar way. But after, well, time will tell, because the attention on the Rodney King case after the riots was kept burning until those guys, some of them, had to answer for their charges. And I guess only one or two of them actually ended up going to jail. But apparently that was the best we can get at the time with the justice system in this country. And now a lot more people are aware of that. Social media is allowing people to spread this information instantaneously. And the fact that information can be spread that easily allows people to have a greater understanding, and also for the flow of information not to be controlled the way the power structure used to control the flow of information and the flow of news. So now this injustice.
You're absolutely right, Eric, about that, because I'm going back. I have a little fewer rings on my tree trunk than Byron in terms of age. But we're pretty much in the same ballpark. We witnessed pretty much the same things. It's not that we weren't out there in great numbers and we weren't woke 30, 40 years ago.
Exactly.
I had this conversation with my millennial cousin last night. But it is the power of social media. It is the power that, you know, white folks, who are largely the victims of police abuse, just predicated on numbers, you know,
yeah, because
there's
a larger population, so that's going to – that's
right.
Number mathematic-wise is going to work out.
Exactly. But the deal is it has been the standard in this community, and everybody has been saying, oh, no, no, no. Or they get sympathetic for a minute, and then, you know, they forget about it. And I just think the confluence of events, the pandemic, the unemployment,
right,
the fact that we're home – and then a half dozen murders, that's what they were, you know, occur, whether at the hands of the police or some bigots, you know. This is what's turned the flame up. And that.
Well, yeah, also, too, and it's seen in its consistency. It happens all the time. You talk about a lot of white people are victims of police abuse. Yeah, because they're the majority of the population, so mathematically it worked out. But they might
right.
not be. I'm sure if you did the statistics – like the statistics for stop and frisk, what, there's some crazy statistics, that many more. What, I thought I heard a statistic that they stopped more black and brown people than actually lived in New York. So that means they have to be stopping people multiple times or whatever. So the fact that they get abused, okay, yeah, that's great. That's not really the subject. But, and also the fact that their abuse that they might experience does not on a consistent basis end up in death or some type of heinous punishment or outcome. So, I mean, it's the attitude with which police officers obviously act towards black people, who happen to be white most of the time, and the way they act towards their own. And so that's the, you know, that's the crux of the matter. I mean, the Republicans put their little weak police reform suggestions, none of them actually dealing or making any changes that were required. You know, it's just more of the same from these guys. Everybody's talking a good game right about now, when it's easy to talk about it. But, you know, we'll see what happens
in
another couple of weeks.
And then they have, they put Tim Scott in the role of having to show, well, we're not biased, you know. And I have problems with, you know, people of color who are placed in these positions and having to say that there is a balance, you know, that we are willing to negotiate without even taking into consideration what the real deal is when it comes to with the Democratic legislation. It's McConnell who's the problem, you know.
So you're saying,
I'm
kind of trying to follow. You said people are placed in the positions. You're talking about Tim Scott? Because he placed himself in that position.
Yeah, yeah. He was elected to that role, but, you know.
But he
the
placed
deal
himself
is
in the position to run
water.
Right. He chose to be a House Negro. So, I mean, he's not
right.
placed in any position. It's like they choose, like those black people that chose to go to a Trump rally. That's the side they choose.
Yeah.
Understandable, but don't. Go ahead.
It just saddens me. I mean, I know that we're not a monolith. I know that we're a monolith. I know we're not a monolith, and the thing is that, you know, when you have people in position of power like that, I used to feel the same way at one point with Condoleezza Rice, but at some point Condoleezza showed me over a period of time, you know, knowing what struggles that she went through to arise to the lofty height that she did during the Bush years. I obviously did not agree with everything. I didn't agree with everything that Colin Powell, but at least today those two look at their party and they see how it is falling apart. You know, Powell has already come out and said who he's voting for in November, and it's the second time he's done this. He did it with Obama, you know, and it wasn't just because of racial pride. He knew that this country was needed for, it was headed for a change, and that it was just a natural progression back in 2008. Now we are fighting for the soul of what this democracy, this republic, democratic republic is all about, you know? And it's just unfortunate that not all of us, you know, are drinking from the same cup, but hopefully there are more of us who understand what's at stake here and that we don't fall for the nonsense that goes on.
What say you, Byron?
Well, right now, I think the awakening is bringing a lot more people out of the shadows, so to speak, and off the side of the curb and into the streets. That's what we're seeing. We're being a witness to what really amounts to another revolution. Yes, we are in the midst of a second civil war in the United States, and that's of course is unfortunate because the first civil war killed over 750,000 Americans, more than any war that we've been in. And now we're in the you're seeing what amounts to the second civil war, these sniping efforts of domestic terrorism. That's what that is. Make no mistake about it. These are not patriots. These are people who are siding with a flag and an ideal that was defeated as the enemy. And
are you talking about particular incidents, or are you just talking about the whole?
I'm talking about every incident from 1619 forward, because at the point at which this is not a new war that's ongoing within our own country, the borders of our country. This is an ongoing war, one in which, because of the failure of understanding military rule of law, that would allow a confederacy, and let's be very clear, the entire word confederate is an abomination to democracy.
Mm-hmm.
You want to call yourself a confederate, a rebel? A rebel, you want to be Johnny Rebel, you are a traitor. You want to salute the bars and stars, you are a traitor.
So let me
keep calling it as such. And those cops who support those initiatives and they want to quit, let them quit. Fire them.
Exactly.
They want to quit, get out of the system. You're holding up jobs that could come to those who could police our community with respect and dignity.
Straight X-Men coming, huh? The aspect of also these kind of Confederate soldiers and that whole notion has evolved into something called militias, right? These organizations that call themselves militias, trying to do the right thing, but they really are, and if we know the they've had stories, last couple of reports I've seen and looking at some stuff on the internet. But we heard about them a long time ago, right, Wayne, back in the day. And they started, you know, and when you see these guys protecting these statues and everything and these racist monuments, that's just a signal for them to come out. But I remember back in the day, in LIB days, when the militias were being on Donahue. And you guys were talking about it back then. Nothing more than an extension of that Confederacy, right, Byron? I mean, you know, these militias that want to act like they're there to keep the peace, but really like they did in New Mexico, they just protected the supremacists that came and was snatching peoples out of their hand, right? And wouldn't let the crowd and call themselves they're keeping the peace or whatever. But of course, the peace and
the
order they keep is their rules.
That's that same mentality that killed that young man in Brunswick, Georgia, who considered themselves to be the posse comitatus and protecting their community with an impunity, saying we have the right to arrest as citizens anyone who abridges my community council rules and regulations, basically.
Right. They ain't nothing
okay.
but some patty rollers. That's what they are. They ain't nothing but some patty rollers.
I'm going to take it back for
y'all.
That's
the problem. And I think there's got to be some uniformity in the law, because we had vigilantes right here in the New York area years ago. And the deal is that because of all the problems that have occurred with that, I'm not saying that we have complete civility, but at least it's not on the order of what's going on down in places like Georgia, or even the insurrection that occurred years ago in Waco, Texas, or, you know, the
right.
Aryan Nation in the Midwest. All those organizations.
Those are different. Then we need to make sure you make the distinction. Those are different than vigilantes. Right? Vigilantes
well, yeah,
people
they
want
are
justice.
Different from vigilantes,
those are
but
racist
they're white
terrorists,
supremacists.
Yeah, those
they,
are racist
they
terrorists,
are
white
terrorists.
Supremacists. They're not, right?
Yeah,
they're not
they're
vigilantes.
White supremacists. Yeah, and the deal is the vigilantes are, well, I mean, the deal is what I'm trying to say with respect to vigilantes, there are people who make up their own rules and regulations, and if they embrace this thing of white privilege, they're going to come up with their own standards. I see no difference between the supremacy movement and when people who espouse that point of view. You know, I remember years
ago, vigilante point of view?
You couldn't go through Howard Beach and Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, and even Bayside, Queens, if you're a person of color. You know, that wasn't too long ago. There's a beach here in the Bronx called White Beach. And I remember one of my neighbors, when I first moved into the area, told me, if you're a person of color, you don't want to be caught down there. And it was their level of vigilantism. And little by little, things progressed, you know, that they allowed for certain things. But supremacy is supremacy.
I just make the issue, because vigilante to me is people who take justice into their own hands. And that's a different than a mob of supremacist or prejudiced people committing acts of violence against someone because of their prejudice. So one is, at least from my understanding.
No, I understand what you're saying, but I'm
trying
to draw a
correlation. One is looking for justice, is willing to take justice into their own hands, and the others are, you know, they're terrorists, you know?
Right.
So that's kind of how I look at them. I mean, either way, I mean, that's what the militias are. They're not the vigilante justice dudes that they claim to be. They are the terrorists that are hiding behind that notion of, I'm a vigilante and I'm, you know, I'm a good guy, you know, hide behind that notion. I'm a good guy with a gun, you know.
Exactly.
Usually are all these little spindly little guys that never been to war, but they want to go and buy guns and walk around and intimidate people that don't agree with them at a protest. I mean, these are the type of cowardly individuals that come out, you know. And we need to, you know, have more of the Black Panthers coming out, not the make-believe ones that showed up at a couple of protests to take some pictures, but some real Black Panthers that have shown up at some of these places. Last couple of minutes, Byron, we want to talk about your show, brother. I didn't really get a chance to see it, and I couldn't get the link, but...
Here's the part which, you know, African-American art and artists take on a very different mantle than other artists. And our mantle is to reflect art that imitates life. And because of that, when you see a rendition of a story of a woman brave as beyond bravery, and taking the beating that she took in Fannie Lou Hamer, which you see on the screen as part of the presentation, to understand she put her life on the line to register to vote, not to go to war, to become a responsible citizen. And, beaten to worse than John Lewis crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge, beaten worse than Amelia Boynton, who was beaten very viciously at the Edmund Pettus Bridge. But this is what they paid their life for. And so I'm very proud of the effort. Joy Reid gave a brilliant presentation and introduction of the piece, and they're remastering it so that it can be put up on YouTube. You'll see it soon, so that all the technical things that we weren't able to create at that point because we were able to go into the editing room, it still was done extraordinarily well. And I thank those who had a chance to watch it because it's all about voting, y'all. And you know every week I sign off by saying we got the power and we must show the power. And the power is in that booth. I swear, when you go in that booth, feel the power surge through you as you pull the lever making your choice for democracy. That's power. More powerful than any weapons of mass destruction. Use it, people. Use it. Thank you. And we'll post it again, Eric and Wayne, because people need to see and understand who this woman was and why she said, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Being sick and tired.
It
was commendable. I didn't get a chance to watch all of it. We had a little power outage in the neighborhood here, but what I did see, was that Joy Reid live or was it just something that was pre-recorded?
She gave a pre-taped introduction. But even so, when our talking heads are taking notice of our art, like Ava DuVernay, like Pearl Clay, like Eric Citizen Payne, you're an art, who artist who's being recognized. Your kitchen pronouncements. I love your kitchen stuff, Eric. You need to keep doing more of that, brother man. Okay, all right. But it's like we have a choice and a chance to speak to our people about the issues that you don't hear or see anywhere else. Thank goodness for social media. And Kay Thompson, thank goodness for her.
I tell you. It's hard to – every time I think about it and I recount the story of the last show, you know, I don't mean to sound maudlin at this point, Eric, but I have to take a minute, man. Your mom was a giant, you know. I still have her picture in my office. I look every day and I just say, hey, you know. I hope you're looking down at us. That's it.
Right, well, that's why I feel the need, you know. And also, we got to keep talking about stuff because these guys, they are never sleep. And so that's that we can never sleep, you know. There's no rest, and when some of us are getting tired, that's when the other one's got to, you know, take over and pull everybody up, you know. People are talking about they're getting tired of explaining racism to America. I'm not tired, so I'm going to be the one. Let me y'all grab onto me. I'm ready to run for a little while because I'm ready to do damage against these cats. And there's a whole bunch of millennial Z cats that's coming up behind us. So that's what we talk about.
Right.
You know, like you were talking about the conversation with the millennial the other night. Each generation has pushed the mantle, pushed the issue forward as much as they could. They've taken what they've learned from the previous generation. They've seen the tactics. They understand what's at stake, and then they apply their own in their new generation, in their generation, a new way to approach that problem, new aspects of the problem coming at them. So now we have this generation that has the benefit of technology to really educate and mobilize, and that's the confluence of all of this stuff happening right now, right? That we're at the right time to be able to combat, unfortunately, someone who comes to our society or to this type of evil that comes to the world like this in this fortune. And this is really the battle of America for the soul of America, this race issue that we've had, whether we're going to continue to be white supremacist country or really be an equal country in all aspects, in every fiber, because in every fiber, it's all a derivative of white supremacy, right? So every fiber of the cop decides to shoot a brother in the back when he probably wouldn't decide to shoot the white guy in the back. I can talk about the police in Buffalo getting a little harsh treatment because they pushed a white man over, and I can see that they didn't mean it. But I don't know if it had been a black man whether they would have showed even a minimal amount of remorse. So, you know, it's in every fiber of American life that exists and was built on. It's one of the principles of America, white supremacy and racism, keeping black people down. That's one of the principles that this country was built on. So that's why I question everything that I didn't question before. You know, when I hear about a military base and, that was named after a Confederate soldier, just when I'm assuming that America is, as is revealing herself to me, or I live in an American and decent country, there's another layer to the onion that shows me just how racist and how much they make an attempt to say F you Negroes, you know? Here's another, it's like a scavenger hunt. And every little piece of the puzzle, little piece of the puzzle you're finding is saying F you, you know?
Well,
so,
I was just going to say, you know, with regard to, you know, taking these monuments down, I really feel just for peace sake, and I don't know if this would spawn any level of civility with those supremacists who feel that they should be
out openly
for everybody to see, but at the end of the day, there needs to be like some mausoleum or museum. They want to put their statues there with some description as to what they did and why they're no longer being seen or viewed publicly. That's a different story, you know? I think maybe that might bring, but at this point, you know, it's like civil war, you know?
That's the point. They put those statues up to still continue to make a point. As Byron, you've talked about the Electoral College, that's still to make a point and saying we still believe in white supremacy, even though we ain't fight right now. That's the reason they made the Civil Rights Pact in the 60s to last only 50 years and say, well, it'll have to be re-ratified at another 50. Because their thinking was, well, maybe we could flip this back and get these people back in chains. You know, and I'm being facetious a little bit, and I'm being a little extreme with it, but that's the perspective they're coming from. They ain't never sleeping. And the fact that they're going to put up monuments, the one time I walked by the New York Museum and saw that statue of Teddy Roosevelt with the brother and the Indian walking down, I was like, you know, and I thought about it, I was like, well, it's messed up. But it's another, we got to walk around seeing these reminders constantly of our subjugation by these people, of our oppression by these people. Mm-hmm. The military bases are naming military bases after Confederate soldiers. Who would think to do that in the first place? Unless you have no feeling or no concept about how somebody else is feeling, unless it's about you and your supremacy, and why not?
Eric, you asked a brilliant question, because the question that's being bandied right now, where we're finding our African-American community who are suffering from policies that have continued to put us into a specific place. And you have to ask that question. Who thinks of those policies? Who enacts those policies? Because at some point, it's not the policy. It's the person who comes up with the concept and the idea.
And what is their intent?
Implementing it and basing it on the fact that it is oppressing somebody.
That's
the question of the 21st century.
Yes,
who
sir.
Who thinks of things like this to put lead in the water where African-Americans are living in Flint, Michigan?
Mm-hmm.
Who thinks of giving syphilis to Tuskegee experimental African-Americans? Who thinks of these things?
That's right.
Ask that
Republicans.
Question.
Republicans.
There it is. Byron, you get the last word, Byron. We got to get off these 90 seconds, brother. You put the pin in the nail, the nail in the wood, brother. So go on and give the people your sign-off, my brother. That was
peace
emphatic,
and love. Peace and love always. Thank you. And vote. Vote, vote, vote.
There it is on all levels. See you next. We'll talk to you tomorrow, brother Byron, maybe, or maybe Saturday.
Yes, sir,
we might have to have a brother's council. All right, my brother.
Right.
Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. What say you? What do you want to leave the peoples with?
My usual, man. Keep hope alive, you know, and I concur with everything that Byron has said so far. And, you know, keep the peace, baby. That's it.
All right. There it is. Keep the peace, baby. That's 1976 right there. All right, brother
Wayne.
Well,
I'm showing my age.
Hey, I'm right there with you, sir. Talk to you later, my man. Brother Wayne Gilman, that's the legendary newsman right there. If you guys don't know, you better know. I'm Citizen Payne. This is Kay's son and friends. My mom, Kay Thompson, we used to do Kay Thompson Live. And now, you know, she's looking down and allowing us to do, allow me, and gave me the foundation to do Kay's son and friends. So, got to go. It's time to go. You can listen to us all the time if you want, or you can catch us live. I couldn't get my song before that I wanted to play.
but I'm going to play this one right here. It's still some bomb. See you later. Check you later. This is Kay's Son and Friends on the Blog Talk. Archived and every live, usually Wednesdays and other days too. All right, I'm out. Peace.
Someone to say we're coming in from the cold, or another one to say the sun is shining and the weather is sweet, and someone to say it's just love, and everyone to